The corruption scandal that has engulfed world football's governing body continues to deepen. Overnight, the European Parliament has called on FIFA's outgoing president, Sepp Blatter, to stand down immediately. FIFA has announced that the bidding process for the 2026 World Cup has been suspended while these investigations continue, and the organisation elects a new president. But the question of what to do about the 2018 and the 2022 World Cups, both now widely believed to have been rigged, presents a much more difficult problem. 2022 is a particularly sore spot for Australia, of course, because we spent tens of millions of dollars on a bid that secured just a handful of votes. A new book called The Ugly Game takes a look at that bid and how Qatar, a tiny desert state with a summer environment unsuited to football, managed to buy one of the world's greatest sporting contests. It focuses on the now disgraced former president of the Asian Football Confederation, Mohammed bin Hamman. It's the work of the journalists Heidi Balker and Jonathan Calvert from the Sunday Times Insight team. James Carlton spoke to Heidi Blake from London this morning.
Mohammed bin Hamman is very much at the centre of our story, and he was Qatar's most senior football official at the time that it was bidding for the 2022 World Cup. And Mohammed bin Hamman waged a campaign, which is what our documents show us, of buying up support from football officials all around the world to back Qatar's World Cup bid. The official Qatari bid committee always denied that he was working on their behalf, but he's very, very close to the Qatari royal family, and he was the most senior official. He was the man who sat on FIFA's ruling executive committee and represented Qatar, and the guy that fixed all the deals that helped them win the World Cup.
Did he see this as a noble calling, as a patriotic Qatari and a lover of football?
I think that's right. And actually, in a way, we have a certain amount of sympathy with Mohammed bin Hamman because he's clearly a patriot. He genuinely loves football. In a country where football really isn't played very much at all, but he actually had a lifelong passion for it since he was a little boy. And the emir, the leader of his country, very much wanted to see the World Cup brought to Qatar as part of his kind of 30-year plan to turn Qatar into a tourist economy and a global hub for major events. And bin Hamman delivered that for him and has paid a very heavy penalty for it because his career in football has been completely destroyed.
But what for the Qatari bid? Is it safe, Qatar hosting the World Cup?
Well, I mean, Sepp Blatter really acted as the main protector of Qatar's World Cup bid after it won the vote. There was a huge international consternation when Qatar was declared as the host of the world's biggest sporting tournament because it's a tiny country. It's so hot in the summer that it's actually dangerous to play sports there. And then very quickly, evidence that the process had been corrupted started to emerge. But Sepp Blatter, now that he's gone, I think Qatar is suddenly looking quite exposed because I think maybe a new president coming in might take a different view.
Even to the extent that Qatar won't host in 2022?
I think that there's the greatest chance ever of that happening now. I mean, one of the things that came out in the research we did for our book was evidence from members of bin Hamman's inner circle, people inside FIFA, people from inside Qatar, that one of the things that Qatar had done after it won the right to host the World Cup was it struck a deal with Sepp Blatter, under which Mohammed bin Hamman agreed to pull out of the 2011 presidential race. And in exchange, Sepp Blatter gave an assurance, is what we're told, that he would make sure that no harm would come to Qatar's World Cup, regardless of the allegations of corruption that were swirling even then back in 2011. And I think that he's held firm to that promise. And you can see time and again, he's refused to listen when evidence of corruption has come out. And I think that now that he's said that he's going to step down, there is a real chance that a new regime would look at that process and see that there is overwhelming evidence that the decision was badly corrupted and that the vote needs to be rerun.
And in preparing your book and in going through those hundreds of thousands of pages of documents, you worked in a sort of nondescript location, almost secret?
Yeah, no, it was a funny old period of time. Because the source was understandably very, very nervous about being identified as the person who passed on these documents, he wanted us to move outside our office in London and work outside in a secure location. And so we left London and left behind all our friends and family and decamped to this funny little office, which we came to call the bunker because it was a kind of small, dark room where we toiled away for 3 months without any breaks, really, just trawling through this enormous mountain of files and evidence.
That was simply to protect the identity of your source. You didn't have any other fears?
No, it was about, that's right, I mean, it was about protecting the identity of the source, making sure that we weren't connected to the source and that nobody knew where we were, and also that the documents were safe, you know, because we realised that there's a lot riding on this for a lot of people, and so we wanted to make sure that the evidence that we had was secure, that there wasn't any risk of anybody else trying to tamper with it or interfere with our computer systems or anything like that.
We've heard earlier in the week from Australia's president of Football Federation Australia, Frank Lowy, who says he was naive about FIFA but insists Australia did nothing wrong. What is your evidence found?
I mean, I think it's quite clear from what I understand about the Australian bid and also the England bid that these bids, they wanted to operate in a clean and fair way, but they also sort of understood, especially because they brought in consultants, kind of FIFA spin doctors who know exactly how the process works and who advised them that in order to win support, they were going to need to shell out some money. And so I think both the England and Australia bids did their best to run, you know, clean and transparent campaigns, but probably ended up paying out money, in England's case, $35,000 for a dinner in the Caribbean, or in Australia's case, I think it was about $400,000 to Jack Warner's centre in CONCACAF, which I think they probably now feel would not be the way they would operate next time. But I think that those grants which were given to football associations ostensibly to do legitimate work are a different order of activity than the direct payments into people's personal bank accounts and the cash handouts and the direct deals for the benefit of FIFA officials, which we see being orchestrated as part of the Qatari campaign run by Mohammed bin Hamad.
And where do you see the future going? Were you surprised at Blatter's resignation?
I was absolutely astonished at Blatter's resignation. I never thought I would see the day. You know, and after years of investigating FIFA and turning out, you know, absolute avalanche of evidence of corruption, all of which has been totally ignored, I just had resigned myself to the fact that it really probably wasn't going to change, and the World Cup would go ahead in Qatar, Sepp Blatter would continue clinging on to power, and I kind of had just accepted that the truth has its own value and it was still worth us having told this story, even though FIFA weren't listening, because at least now the world knew what had happened. And so actually to see Blatter go was totally unexpected, and I don't think anyone quite knows what had happened behind the scenes to prompt his resignation, but it's certainly a huge leap forward for everyone who has an interest in reforming FIFA, and I really dearly hope that the person who comes in to replace him is part of the movement for reform.
Given that all you exposed did not prompt him to resign, what on earth could you speculate he could have been presented with behind closed doors that did prompt him to resign?
I mean, clearly the FBI investigation is creating huge, huge pressure on FIFA because the net is closing in, and they have this very, very aggressive investigation going on over there in the US. And they, you know, one of the developments that had happened the day before Blatter resigned was that it emerged that FIFA had facilitated a payment from South Africa World Cup organisers to a FIFA official, Jack Warner, and that Jerome Ralker, Blatter's right-hand man, had been aware of that. Now, that brought the scandal much closer to the president's door than it had ever come before, and it could have been that that was part of the decision. But I don't think at the moment we understand the full picture, and maybe we never will.
Maybe we never will. It's Heidi Blake speaking with James Carlton, and Heidi Blake and Jonathan Calvert, a journalist with the Sunday Times Insight team, and they've written this new book. It's called The Ugly Game.